Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 234, and we're going to talk about the future of van life. All right, it may be a little bit of a large topic, but we're going to tackle it anyway, because that's what we do. We're also going to talk about a couple of video games, because heck, it's time to have some fun as those dark days encroach upon the Northern Hemisphere. And we'll have a little bit of advice on how to cover your van, should you ever want to. Hello everyone, welcome back. Again, my voice is not 100%, but we're going to push through and get this episode out, even though it is the wee hours of Election Day in the United States, and that is mostly what people are thinking about and talking about, but I think I can speak for just about everybody that we're just sick of it, and we'd like to focus on some other things, so I hope to help you do that with this episode. Before I get in here, though, I am going to be traveling extensively over the coming week, and I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do with the podcast. I've got a couple of ideas, but over the next week, I am traveling to, I've got a list here, I'm going to Budapest for a few days, then Bratislava, then Vienna, then Weissenkirchen, Ibs, I think that's how you pronounce it, Green, Linz, Passau, Wilshofen, Regensburg, and Prague. And I wish I could do all this in a van, but I'm actually going to be in one of those long, skinny, wet vans going on the Danube River with a bunch of folks. And we're going to have a great time, but I'm not exactly sure how I'm going to handle the podcast for this period. So, heck, we'll find out together. But I will try to have some content out during that incredibly busy period. But until then, let's ponder the future of van life. But first, a sip of coffee, because holy cow, it's early. I'm trying to adjust to Budapest time, and 7 hours, that's a lot. Ah, cheers. Okay. The future of van life. Well, one way to try to figure out what's going to happen in the future is to look at the past, something I wish more people would do. But if we look at the past of van life, well, heck, how far back do you want to go? I mean, to me, van life is just people living and traveling in vehicles, and we've done that since we've had vehicles. And we've had vehicles a really long time. I mean, heck, the word van comes from the word caravan, which comes from, you know, caravans like camels and other, you know, way back. Although I completely recognize that in Commonwealth countries, caravan is actually the word for a camper. But that doesn't carry over to the United States because, you know, we're a little weird over here. At any rate, what has changed is technology. That has been the largest change to van life since it started. The practice has been the same. You go from one place to another, and then you stop and you live out of your vehicle. That fact hasn't changed very much over probably millennia. But technology has changed. And obviously, we're in a period of ramped up technology here. And it, just when you think it can't get any faster, in comes AI, and holy cow, everything's changing. Little side note, I'm at the point now where AI is a completely useful tool in my life. I needed to write a brochure, and I let AI write it. And while that you might think, well, then you didn't really write it, you're just kind of copping out here. Well, no. I had it do the bulk of the work for me, and then I went back in and edited it, and made it exactly the document I wanted it to be. So the end product was actually better than if I had started writing it from scratch, and it took me 1/10 the time it normally would have. So it's interesting to see what AI is going to do for van life. But before we get into that, we have to talk about the next big thing in van life, which everybody seems to think is electric vans. Now, EV came in roaring hard towards the end of the 2010s, and then COVID came, and now I'm not really sure where it's going. All the numbers are there. Electric vehicles make a lot of sense, but the world is really dragging its feet getting there. And when I say the world, I'm going to speak specifically about the United States. We have more and more EVs, this is true, and they've become a fact of life, and no one really turns their head anymore when they see a Tesla, unless it's that new one. But we're still not catching up with infrastructure. In fact, I see more EV charging places closing than I see opening, and that's the wrong trend. And I could do a whole episode about the problems of infrastructure, but let's assume that that's going to get fixed. We're going to have new infrastructure, meaning that it won't be hard to find places to charge your van. Everyone will be able to charge their vans at home, which isn't the case right now, sadly. Well, then we get into the problem of capacity. And folks, I think that's the problem that's going to be solved. There's so much pressure to solve the capacity issue where you want your van to be able to do 300 miles on a charge. I think we're getting there. And on top of that, the speed of which you can charge is ramping up too. I think lithium batteries are going to be seen as quaint in the next 5 years. That's a prediction I will make. We're going to come up with some other technology that's going to make lithium batteries seem old and tired, and it's going to be a faster charge, higher capacity, lower cost, and lower weight type of thing. Not exactly sure what it's going to look like. There's all kinds of research going on now with things like salt batteries and stuff like that. I hope we get there quickly, but I think that's what's coming. And so then how will that change van life? Well, you will see the error of the all-EV van, where basically the entire van is electric. And we're already seeing that in some limited cases. But no more propane, no more wood stoves in your van. You know, you'll be cooking electric and heating electric, and air conditioning, I think, I hope, will be ubiquitous. That's going to lower the barrier for people to get into van life because they'll be able to be more comfortable. The problem is money. How are we going to get these vans to be affordable? Because one of the appeals of van life is that you can get into it for relatively little money. You can buy an old beat-up van and throw a mattress in it and say, I'm doing van life, and that's it. I don't know how that's going to translate once we start getting into EV areas, because you can keep an engine running for just about as long as you're willing to keep throwing time and money at it. You know, you could have the engine of Theseus where you just keep replacing parts and it keeps running. With an EV, well, the way it is today, you've got this one very expensive part that you can't fix generally, and that is the battery pack. So if you imagine a 15-year-old EV van, how are you going to keep that limping along when, if that battery pack's gone, you have to replace it and then it costs thousands of dollars? I don't know, but people are going to find a way because they always do. The next step from there, something that we've seen a lot of promise of but haven't seen that much delivery of, is autonomous van life. Now, we're already seeing the first steps of that, where we have vehicles that are doing some of the driving for you. I've driven these vehicles, you've driven these vehicles probably, if you've rented a car recently, where the vehicle will keep you in the lane and such, and then there are Waymo and fancier things like that, where there is no driver, and you can take a taxi that will drive you around to where you want to go. But imagine a world where your van will do that, where you get in your van in Boise, Idaho, and say, I would like to go visit the Grand Canyon, and you type in some numbers, and then off you go, except you're in the back having a nap. All right, that might be too much, but maybe not. Maybe not. We'll see. That could be the future of van life. 50 years from now, people could just be getting in their vans, typing in where they want to go, and then going in the back and taking a nap, watching a movie, or doing whatever. I don't think I'm going to live long enough to see that, but boy, I'd really like to. Technology is definitely going to keep changing how our vans work. And hopefully for the better. But I really don't think we're going to see the internal combustion engine completely disappear from vans and trucks for a good 20 years or so. So, I don't know. We'll see. It's the future and it's a prediction. And I can get away with whatever I want because you can't prove it. One interesting thing to look at is how many people will be doing van life. I ran across this statistic saying that since 2020, basically from 2020 to 2022, the number of people living in vans in the U.S. went from 1.9 million to 3.1 million. If we follow that trend, that means we'd be at 6.2 million in 2024, which I don't think we have. Obviously, COVID created a whole artificial world, and there were a lot of people doing things that they don't normally do. And how they count somebody living in a van is tricky. Are these people living there by choice, or are they not living there by choice, or are these people who did it for a weekend? I don't know. I don't have the numbers. I don't know how they did that. But there's no question that van life is growing. Despite all the YouTubers quitting van life and all the people saying that Instagram lies to you, van life really sucks, blah, 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 there's still a lot of people doing van life. And I don't see that trend changing. I think van life's hype will wax and wane, but I think the number of people who see somebody in a camper van and say, wow, that looks like fun, I don't think that's going to go anywhere but up. So what we're going to have is more people out there camping in vans. And, you know, obviously, I'm a fan, but this is going to rely heavily on what I just talked about, which is the cost of ownership. If you want to kill van life, make van life too expensive. There's always going to be the people who have $150,000 to throw into a van. They're fine. They're always going to be there. There's always going to be vans for them. But I'm actually more concerned about the people with $5,000 who want to start van life. Technology could price them out of the market. We could be in a situation where you can't do van life because you can't afford any kind of van. The whole auto industry has changed drastically in the last 20 years. The days when you could just keep an old beater running in your driveway are under threat. While we can still do it today, there are so many computers and high-tech things in your vehicle, and the dealers are putting on so much pressure in the direction that you can't repair the vehicles yourself. You have to go to the dealer, that the cost of keeping an old vehicle running suddenly becomes not worth it, and you're stuck. And I don't know how that's going to shake out. I mean, there's always a low-end market for vehicles. People need to move, but the way things are going, it seems like there's going to be a floor. And if you're beneath that floor, you're simply not going to be able to afford a vehicle. And that floor is going higher and higher. So I am actually concerned about this. You may have heard of right to repair. It was a big issue in the John Deere community. That is going away. The idea that you can just do all your own repairs is kind of going away. And I've run into that with my 2011 Sprinter for some things. So what does that future look like? I don't know, but we should pay attention. And finally, what does the impact of van life look like in the future? Right now, we are loving our national parks to death. The big popular national parks are completely overwhelmed. Camping spaces, I'm talking about commercial camping spaces, are very hard to find throughout much of the country. And the more people are doing camping vans, the more pressure there is going to be on this. So you say, well, I'll just stay in BLM land. Okay, that's fine, but there's a lot of pressure there too. In fact, recently they've had to close some BLM areas because people have been camping on them too much. Now, this is one of these situations where one bad egg spoils the bunch. You get somebody who goes out and lives in BLM land for 3 months and throws trash everywhere for a 3-square-mile radius. Can you have square miles as a radius? Well, today we're going to. Yeah, they will ruin it for everybody. You know, the impact of one person can equal the impact of 100 if that one person is a particularly bad person. But how is that going to be handled? Politically, there's pressure to reduce the number of national parks. There's pressure to repurpose BLM land and to actually give it back to the states, not that they ever had it in the first place, so that they can use it for other things. So we may have a pressure there where we may have fewer places we can go with camper vans. And, of course, we have this ongoing trend of criminalizing van life as part of an anti-homelessness policy. We've seen this in many, many places across the U.S. now, and in Europe. It's not just the U.S. folks. That is also a concern. So, what is the future of van life? I don't know. There's some ideas. There's some things to think about. But you actually do have an impact on the future. The vans you buy, the way you camp, and how you build out your van will all impact not only your future, but everyone's future as you help to shape trends in a very small way. I hope to see you out there 20 years from now. I just don't know what it's going to look like, but I have hope. Thanks very much to Get Off a Log for helping to support this podcast by buying me some diesel at buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. Folks like Get Off the Log help keep ads off of this podcast, so we do not have any commercials. We can just listen to me ramble, which somehow is better, I guess. Okay. If you would like to help support the show, please visit buymeacoffee.com/builttogo, and you can buy me a gallon of diesel too, and we will continue on having no ads on this podcast. Van Life News. Hey, let's talk about some fun stuff here for a little bit. There is a new camper van game now. Well, I've talked about it before, but it's actually live now. It's called Camper Van Make It Home. And this is what they call a cozy game. And basically, you've given an old Volkswagen van, and your entire job in this van is to make it home. You get to decorate it, you get to move things around, you get to set up your campsite, all this kind of things. I've heard people describe it as like The Sims for van life, whatever. But that game is out now. I've got a link in the show notes, but it's called Camper Van Make It Home. So if it's a little wintry out and you actually just want to snuggle down a bit and not go anywhere, you know, maybe pull out your computer or your Switch or whatever and heck, do some virtual van life instead. But that game is live now, and it's getting some pretty good reviews, so check it out. Now, over in the UK, I ran into this. This is kind of an old article, but I thought I would just bring it up because it's something we don't think of here in the US. In the UK, when you build out your own camper van, it can be very difficult to have the government consider it a camper van. All you have to do is go onto a UK van life forum, and like half the posts are about this. How could I get them to say it's a camper van? I put stickers on it and windows, and they're still saying it's just a van. And you might be thinking, well, does it really matter? Well, it does. It matters in a lot of ways. And one that I just found is that it matters in speed limits. So if you've got a cargo van in the UK, your speed limit might be, and they do speed limits based on vehicles in Europe more than we do in the US. We do that a little bit. You will see signs on the road that says, that'll say speed limit 70, trucks 60, something like that. Over there, it's kind of a nationwide thing where like the maximum speed of this type of vehicle in the country is this. So for a van, let's say it will be 50 miles per hour. For a camper van, it could be 60, so it could be another 20% faster if your vehicle is designated a camper van rather than it just being a van. Same vehicle, it's just some bureaucrat stamping on it that it's a camper van. But heck, if you're driving long distances, the difference between 50 and 60 is pretty big. So, yeah, there's something to think about. If you are going to build out a camper van in England or Scotland or Wales or Ireland or anywhere else over there, start by looking at what requirements there are for a van being considered a camper van. Start there, because you are definitely going to want to go through the effort of having your van labeled camper van. There's a lot of advantages to it. And I've got a link to an article that talks about that from, and I have a link in the show notes that talks about that from The Sun in Ireland. And finally, something else that's fun. Is this an ad? I don't know. It doesn't matter. I'm going to talk about it anyway. Van Fest Liftoff is happening in February in Vero, Florida, right on the Space Coast. It's from February 6th to February 9th. I will be there. I'll be giving two talks, one on which van to choose to build out, and another on stealth camping. Does it exist? And I had a great time there last year. I'm going to have a great time there this year, too, and I hope you are. So I will have a link in the show notes to liftoffgathering.com, where you can sign up. It's not very expensive. The weather will be great, and if we're lucky, we will see an actual rocket launch from the campground, which we did do last year. That was a whole lot of fun. So, heck, folks, get to support East Coast Van Life Gatherings. There's very few of them. Here's one in a nice warm place at a time of year where it's hard to find a nice warm place. Let's give these guys some support, and I will see you there. Tech Talk. So maybe you're like me and you don't use your van constantly, and sometimes you're going to leave it out for a month or so and you want to cover it up. Well, how do you cover it up? It turns out it's a little bit more complicated than you might think, and you can actually damage your van pretty badly if you do it wrong. So many, many years ago, I bought a Kubota tractor, and I had to have it sit for 3 months for reasons. And I thought, well, I just don't want to have it sit out there in the field. I better cover it up. So I went to Home Depot, bought a tarp, covered it up, staked it down. You know, the tarp was as good as I could make it. Came back 3 months later. Kubota was still there. Tarp had moved a bit because wind will move your tarp no matter what you do. But when I took the tarp off the Kubota, I found that the tarp had actually rubbed the paint off the Kubota. Not the whole Kubota, but anywhere where the tarp was touching the tractor, it actually rubbed the paint and primer down, and I was looking at shiny metal. It sanded the paint off of my Kubota. Now, this was an old beat-up tractor. I wasn't terribly worried about it. But on a van, a camper van that you've spent so many hours building out, that could be pretty bad. So, first thing is, don't just go to Home Depot and buy a cheap tarp and cover your van with it. At least not for any period of time, because that stuff's like sandpaper. It will wave in the wind and it will damage whatever you're putting it on. It's also not terribly waterproof, which is good and bad. That gets me to the next thing. You might say, well, I'll just cover it with plastic, right? You can get rolls of plastic. It's fairly cheap, and it will not have the sandpaper effect so much as a tarp, but it also traps moisture. You're basically going to be creating this nice, moist place under your fake tarp that you've built here. That isn't good either. Moisture is bad. You want that moisture to be able to get out of there. And yeah, I wouldn't do that. I don't like the plastic idea at all. So what do you do? Well, the first thing you do is you clean the heck out of your van. Whatever you cover it with is going to move. And if there's dirt on your paint, it's going to move on that dirt, creating basically a sandpaper effect. So clean the heck out of your van, let it dry, and then cover it either with an actual car cover that's made out of a very fine material like nylon or even silk. An old parachute was a common thing to cover cars with back in the day. That's what you want. And then you want to offset it as much as you can from the van. Like if you can stake it out so it's away from the van and there's as little of the material touching the van as possible, that's best. But if you can't do that, try to snug it up so it won't move so much. You know, you basically have the two approaches. You want to either put it like under a tent or have it all snuggled up with some kind of a tarp. But don't cheap out on it. Spend a couple $100 on that covering because it will protect your van more. I promise you, if you go buy one of those blue tarps and cover your van with it, you're going to have problems. It looks like an easy, cheap solution, but you could actually do a lot of damage, and that's kind of what you're trying to avoid by covering your van, right? You're better off not covering it than putting a blue tarp on it. So, something to think about. Product review. Yes, folks, another video game. We've got two video games to talk about, and heck, van life video games are apparently becoming a thing, and I have not played this one yet because I can't, but I am looking forward to it. So I saw this today as I was looking around for stuff, and I thought, wow, that looks like a lot of fun. So it's called Caravan Sandwich. Not that you'd eat kind of witch, the other kind of witch, the Halloween-y witch. Yes, that kind of witch. This game looks a lot like Borderlands. It's not really the same kind of game, but it is open world like Borderlands, has a similar feel, and basically you're a dude with a really fun tricked out camper van, and you're in this open world environment, sort of post-apocalyptic, but not entirely, and you're trying to solve some mysteries. That's basically the entire game. And nice mechanics. You actually get to drive the van around a lot, which you don't in camper van make at home. It's an odd thing that you have this camper van, but you don't really get to drive it anywhere. Camper Van Sandwich, you do a lot of driving, and you do a lot of modifications of your van. And then you explore the world, and you do the van lifey things in kind of like the future with, you know, mysteries and technology and stuff like that. Anyway, you already know if this game sounds good or not. I don't need to talk about it anymore. But check it out. There's a free demo, so you can play it on PC for free. You just download it and play it and see if it's your jam. And if it is, heck, you can buy it. And I have a link in the show notes for the Steam link. But it's just Caravan Sandwich, like the Halloween witch. And you can see some demos on YouTube, too. So I'm going to check it out as soon as I can, but that's not going to be for a while. Tales from the Road. So, just came back from Death Valley, had a literally epic trip there. Crazy stuff happened. It was a great trip. But there was this one moment where there was something on the schedule that we wanted to do, and then the rarest thing in the world happened. We had just had an epic day driving all over Death Valley, seeing all kinds of stuff like Artist's Palette and Emigrant Canyon and the petroglyphs there. And, I mean, we had an awesome day. But I had promised folks some night photography and some astronomy because it's not hard to get to a dark sky area from Beatty, Nevada. And we actually brought in an astronomer to help us with this. Her name's Erica. She's a fantastic person for this. She's really good at outreach. And she is one of only 15 people to have discovered an exoplanet. At least that's how I understand it. But anyway, we were thrilled to have her. The problem is, there was a thunderstorm the night that we were supposed to do this, and it was a big one. Now, this is the desert. They get like 0.2 inches of rain a year, and the one night of the year that we're going to do this thing, yes, of course, there's the thunderstorm. But heck, we were going to do it anyway. So I had previously picked out a place to go, which was Rhyolite, the ghost town, because it's very easy to get to from Beatty. There aren't too many lights there. It's not perfectly dark sky, but for city folk, it's pretty dark. And it's got kind of a tilt to the landscape, so you have a sweeping view of the sky. But, yeah, thunderstorm. So not only thunderstorm, we had literal gale-force winds. People were getting blown around the parking lot. All the burros ran away and hid somewhere. And, I mean, it was pretty gnarly. It was kind of fun, honestly. So we had 50 people with us, and I figured a lot would cancel. But I said, look, guys, here's the deal. I'm going to show up at the front with my van, and anybody who wants to can join us in this adventure. And we're going to go to the ghost town at night with the astronomer, and we're going to see what happens. Now, I checked the weather to make sure it was okay to drive the van, and I'm obviously an experienced van driver, so I wasn't terribly worried about the wind, and I'd already driven these vans around and knew how they handled, so, you know, I had a limit. If things were too dangerous, I was going to turn around. I told everybody that, but I wasn't too worried about what I had already experienced. But yeah, people showed up. We had a whole van. People showed up to do this crazy thing, and so we did. We drove out into the darkness, 40-mile-an-hour winds, and honestly, the Ford Transit low-roof van handled very well in the wind. I was very impressed with it. It didn't hurt to have 12 people in the back, so the van had some weight to it. And we went up to Rhyolite, and I basically drove around with the headlights of the van and gave the world's briefest tour of Rhyolite Ghost Town through the headlights of the van. And if you've ever been to Rhyolite, there are some iconic things to see there, things that are in a lot of movies. If you've ever seen 2005 Michael Bay's The Island, where they escape from this facility and they crawl out into these ruins, that's Rhyolite, and that's where we were. And so folks in the van could, like, make out these shapes, and honestly, I think it was it made the ghost town a lot more creepy seeing it through the rain and the wind and the fogged up windows and everything. I figure people just had no idea where they were. So I turned off the lights and it was complete utter darkness. And actually some people were bothered by that, so I didn't do it for very long. Anyway, what about the astronomy? How do you do astronomy when you can't see the sky? Well, to Erica's credit, what she did was, during the drive, she kind of gave a history of exoplanets and her research and all this stuff. And so it wasn't what we had planned, but the show did go on. We had some astronomy content. We had a nighttime trip to a ghost town, and it was kind of fun. And then, as a bonus for everybody, even though it wasn't on the schedule, we took the entire group through Rhyolite for a quick drive-through. We saw the bottle house and the train station and the school and the bank and the general store and all the stuff you see when you go there. And that gave people some perspective as to what they had seen the night before. Anyway, it was fun. I love being out in the desert. I love Rhyolite. I love that whole area. But, you know, there's something to the show must go on thing where, even though it's impossible, you do it anyway, and things happen, and you have fun. And I think that's a good attitude to have. And I think the people enjoyed it. I hope they did. A place to visit. I have talked about the Meow Wolf experience a few times, and boy, they've gotten big. I mean, the first time I went to Meow Wolf, I can't remember what year it was, but it was a long time ago now. It might have even been 2017. It was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I've been to a few since then. And I was in Vegas, and I thought, well, I hate Vegas, so what am I going to do? So I went to Omega Mart, which is at Area 15, and which is its own weird place. But I'm just going to focus on Omega Mart. So Omega Mart is a Meow Wolf experience. If you've not experienced one of these places, it's kind of a surreal, it's not really an escape room. It's more than an art museum. I don't know really how to explain it, but you basically go in this building and weird things happen and you walk around and explore and press buttons and try to figure out what's going on. That's what Meow Wolf is. That's what they all are, but they're all different. And Omega Mart, as it sounds like, is a supermarket. You go into a supermarket and if you look carefully at the sign, you can it says Omega Mart, but the first letter, the O and the M, are kind of done different, and if you erase those, you get Mega Art. Get it? Yeah, that's the theme here. But you go into the supermarket, and at first glance, it's just a normal supermarket, and then you look a little closer, and the products are all a little strange. I will not reveal the secrets to you, but it is a surreal experience. This is definitely the kind of place where you want to read the ingredients, and what I thought was very cool is that it is actually a real supermarket in the sense that you can buy the stuff on the shelves, even though it's art. Anyway, there's a lot more to this place than just a supermarket. It turns out that if you open the ice chest, well, maybe you might find a portal to another dimension. Little things like that around every corner, but nothing too dangerous. I don't think. You can easily spend a few hours here. It's quite expensive. It was about $54 for us to get in, which I blame much more on the Vegas scene than I do on Meow Wolf. But and the one in Denver is expensive, too. I mean, they're doing very well for themselves and good, and I like to support the arts, so I will pay that. But if you're in Vegas and looking to get away from the normal Vegas stuff and go see some other strange stuff. I mean, Vegas is pretty surreal to begin with. Heck, check it out. Omega Mart is a lot of fun. And especially if you're in Vegas in the summer, it's air conditioned. So you can guys go in there and spend a few hours in sort of an open area that's air conditioned, but yet you're entertained at the same time. Pretty easy to find, meowwolf.com. You can just Google Omega Mart. I took an Uber there. It's very easy. I think that's the best thing to do rather than to try to drive or take public transit for that particular location. And it's in the middle of this Area 15 place. I don't even know how to describe it, but you could even spend your whole day there in this recreation area with all these other weird things you can do. And Omega Mart is clearly the gem of this place, but the other stuff was kind of interesting too. And really interesting was that this is more of an adult-focused place. There weren't that many kids. While I think kids would like it, this was an area with a lot of bars and things focused at the adult market rather than the kid market. So don't feel like you're going to an amusement park. Something a bit different. So, heck, I liked it. I think you should check it out. Omega Mart from Meow Wolf in Las Vegas. Resource recommendation. So where do you go if you need some rare parts for your vehicle? Maybe you've got one of those lovely old Dodge B-Class vans and you're trying to find a part for it. Or maybe you've got some kind of an old 4x4 with some Quigley components and you can't... Where do you go to find rare parts? Well, heck, you might go to rareparts.com. Yeah, all right. That's it. Rare parts. Rareparts.com. Where else would you look? So there are a lot of sites like this, but this one is specifically for finding rare steering and suspension parts. I mean, that's their big thing. That's what they care about. But they go back to 1920. So if you have that 1920 camper van out there and you're looking for parts, heck, they may have it. But, you know, more realistically, let's say you're looking for a 78 Chevy G20 and you need something for that. Which, you know, there's still a lot of them out there on the road. Well, yeah. I mean, they've got ball joints. They've got control arm bumpers, control arm bushings, control arm shaft kits. I mean, they've got all these nitty-gritty little parts that it might be hard to find at your local hardware store these days. And, heck, they've got makes that you don't even hear about anymore. Remember Checkers? Remember the Checker cab? My dad had one. We drove it around a while. That's a vehicle that would actually make a decent camper. If you happen to have an old Checker, the space in the back seat, it was amazing. But where would you get parts for it? Heck, rareparts.com has some parts for it. Same thing. Now, it's mostly steering and suspension, but that's good. Those are the parts that can be really hard to find that matter. You know, if you need a tie rod end and you don't have one, that's the end of your vehicle. So This may or may not help you. I have not used this service. I can't tell you how good the company is in general, but I can tell you that it exists, and I know how frustrating it is to have everything going great in your van and to need some part you can't get anywhere, and that's especially true for older vans. So, heck, check out rareparts.com. They might have that steering or suspension part that you've really been looking for and haven't been able to find anywhere. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 234. If you need to get a hold of me for any reason, you can find me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. And until next time, remember the words of Henry Ward Beecher, who said, "The difference between perseverance and obstinacy is that one comes from a strong will and the other comes from a strong won't."